Before we get started with this week's episode, we'd like to remind you folks that the Air Raid podcast is available at many places, including iTunes, the Stitcher Radio app for your smart device, CairoRadio.com, and the all-new Adore Network at Adore.fm. Let's get started with the episode. Well, hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 288 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Yes, indeed, folks, we've got a great show planned for you this week. Matt Drenick of the band Battle Me. From Portland, Oregon, will be joining us here shortly. This conversation with Matt was recorded a couple of weeks ago while they were up here in Seattle for a short three-stop tour. Just fantastic chat, man. The dude was awesome and down to conversate, and we did just that. So we'll be bringing you that shortly. Just FYI, just a little disclaimer here. There's a little bit of talk about a degenerative eye disease. I believe that's what it's called. So there's some eyeball talk. I know that some people can't handle that. We've talked about dental issues in the past and gotten some emails from some pretty grossed out people. Just be aware. There's some eyeball talk. Okay. It involves lasers, though. It's nothing. I tell a story. Yeah. There's some eyeball talk, okay? All right. Hey, I hope you guys have all had a great couple of weeks. We had to take last week off because got some stuff going on, man. Got some stuff going on. I threw my back out a couple weeks ago. I don't know if I mentioned that in the last one that we recorded. In the Gazebos episode, but I've been having some back issues. I had to cancel a couple of interviews, which I felt really fucking shitty about. It was just bad deals, man. And the stuff going on with the family that I can't talk about yet. How's that for just being totally vague? Yeah. Just some issues, man. Life has gotten in the way. And big apologies to Tyler, who actually set this chat up with Battle Me. We were supposed to do another chat with Drew Holcomb and the Neighbors while they were here in Seattle, and Tyler was trying to set that up with me. And, well, we did have it set up, and then I had to cancel last minute because some shit hit the fan here at the Roden household. And hopefully we'll be able to chat about that here shortly. But needless to say, had to take last week off just because, I needed to be with my family and I could barely move. So here we are. We're back at it, folks. We're back at it. And man, do I feel rusty. I don't know. When enough time passes, when I don't do this show or record anything, it takes a second to get back into the swing of things, man. Seriously. But some great stuff coming up, by the way. Great stuff coming up. We've got a ton of stuff planned for this month, and I don't want to jinx it, so I'm not going to say any names. I'm pretty excited about next week's episode, man. It's going to be fucking rad. I can't wait for you guys to hear it. Hopefully, it goes well. It hasn't been recorded yet, so let's keep our fingers crossed on that one, right? We've got some emails that we need to get to. Like I said in the episode 2 weeks ago with Gazebos, we've been getting a ton of that, so I wanted to get to at least a couple of them. But first, let's talk about Battle Me for just a moment. Their new album, Habitual Love Songs, which we will be featuring three songs off of this new album of theirs, which is fantastic. It's out now. You can find it on iTunes, and you can also go to... where's their website? Dang it. Why did it close? What's going on? I think it's just battleme.tv. There you go. Yeah, that sounds right. That sounds right. Yeah, battleme.tv. Battleme, one word, .tv, okay? Yeah, a bunch of great guys, man. It was fabulous. They came up to the Sunset, played the Sunset Club in Ballard, Washington. Got to chat with Matt Drenick, the lead guy. He kind of put this whole outfit together. And then got to meet the rest of the band, Chad and JJ and Scott, man. They were all fantastic people, fantastic human beings. And man, did they put on a great live show. It was insane. The amount of energy that these guys had on the small stage that is at the Sunset was pretty, it was great, man. And it was awesome to see this type of music. I hadn't seen a live band that played, you know, just straight fucking rock and roll, man. For a little while, it's been a little while since I had been to a show like that. And so it was really refreshing, and these guys just totally brought it and really, really just blew the roof off of the Sunset whenever that was that I saw them a couple of weeks ago. Maybe it might have been almost a month ago, I think. Yeah. Okay. All right. So let's get to a couple of these emails, shall we? We've got some emails just one email. And then some new iTunes reviews that I'd like to read for you, and then something from a new fan on Twitter as well. Because you can reach out to us in all these different ways. If you'd like to email us, you can get in touch by emailing me directly at aaron@air-raid.net. And this one came in, a little while ago. It starts here. I finally did it. While enjoying some drinks last weekend with a group of friends of mine at a bar, my friend Alice brought up that she needed a new podcast to listen to, preferably one that would introduce her to new music. I instantly thought to myself, this is my chance to fulfill my pledge to the Air Raid podcast. And I told her and a number of others about your show, and they all immediately subscribed. I was very proud of myself. You're welcome. P.S. While typing this message, my friend Alice texted me and stated that she is now a super fan and going through the archives. That is awesome. That's from Nico in Austin, Texas. Thank you so much, Nico. That's so fucking great. That's what this whole thing is about, right? That's what we say at the end of the show. We urge you to take the pledge. We urge you to tell your friends about the show. Get them to subscribe to it. You know, have them listen to a couple episodes, some of your favorites, if you can tell them your favorites and stuff, like Nico did. And you know, you see what happens, man. If they like the show, that's great. They'll subscribe. They'll keep listening. That's awesome. Bring it up in conversation, right? That's what we always say. Okay. A couple of new iTunes reviews. We don't get many of these, but like in the end of every episode, once again, we like to urge you guys to do this. At least just give us a star rating, because it really does help out in getting more people to notice the show, because it brings us up in the standings and all that good stuff. This one says, thank you for interviewing Tom Price of the band Gas Huffer. I hadn't heard, this one's from a guy by the name of Tom Thurber. I hadn't heard of your podcast before, but came across a link from the Tom Price Desert Classic Facebook page. Man, it was high time that someone acknowledged Price's contributions to the Seattle music scene. The guy is a local music icon. Even though I haven't listened to any other episodes from your show, I'm giving it 5 stars just for interviewing Tom Price. You should have him on again to speak about the latest album. Tom, thank you so much for the 5-star review, dude. I hope you have had a chance to check out some of the other shows. Hope you're listening now. Hope you're enjoying it. We will not probably have Tom back on the show. Well, for a while, anyway. We try to keep it fresh, keep it going, you know, have new guests on the show each week. We don't like to do a lot of repeats because, you know, by the time we've talked to him once, we've pretty much hit on their life story, and hit on what's going on. Although, I will say, we're going to try to have more people from past episodes come back on and pimp their wares, you know, just catch up for a moment at the beginning of some of the episodes, so be ready for that as well. So, Tom, if you're listening, it'd be great to have you back on for something like that. This one from R. Greenlee, which I think is actually the runner of things at the Adore Network. This show is so entertaining and full of great celebrity guests and independent music. Keep up the great work, Aaron. Your episode with Jack Quaid was great. Well, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Greenlee. And even though he's, you know, he's the guy that runs the network that this show is on, he's still a fan of the show. So that's great. So, yeah, go to iTunes and rate the podcast, will you? It really does help us out. Let's see. If you'd like to tweet at us, you can get at us at Air Raid Net. This one comes from Dan Cable. Your cast is one of my new favorites. Found it from the iTunes ad. Let's see. Jurassic 5, an episode with Baron Vaughn, was so good. Escape the Glass Tunnel. I think he's referring to what I was talking about a couple weeks ago, about just feeling like I'm just like in this tunnel that's collapsing behind me and I keep on having to go forward. I can't slow down or I'm just going to get sucked into the abyss, right? I think that's what Dan is referring to. Thank you so much, Dan. It's great to have you listening to the show. Yeah. Hope you like the other episodes. Go to iTunes, rate the show, will ya? Okay. All right. Okay. I think that about does it. We've gone on long enough. Again, if you'd like to email us, we love getting your emails. We've got a ton backlogged here that maybe we'll get to some next week as well. You can email me, aaron at air-raid.net. And remember, take the pledge like Nico from Austin, Texas, and her friends hopefully will do. And tell your friends about the show. All right? Okay. Let's go with our first musical break. We're featuring music from the new Battle Me album called Habitual Love Songs. It's out now. Go get yourself a copy. Go to battleme.tv. Let's see. This one is called Post Is Dead, and we'll be right back with our conversation with Matt Drenick of the band Battle Me. All right? Post Is Dead. Be back in a moment. Stay with us.
Not by my own fault, more because I have this crazy autoimmune disease. And so it...
Do you really?
Yeah.
What is it?
It's called uveitis. Yeah, it's... Okay,
shut
so,
up. Does
yeah.
that, is that real?
It does, yeah, it does. It exists, and it's... I would say that, you know, not a lot of people have it.
Okay.
What it does is it creates inflammation in the eyes. So it's like, you know, people that have asthma have yeah. inflammation in the lungs... This is just one that manifests itself in my eyes, so...
Really? Does yeah. it hurt?
No, it's more it gets foggy. It can cause blindness if it's not treated.
Really?
And I had to get, I had two cataracts, one in each eye. You know, I had to get them removed, so I have fake lenses in my eyes.
Really?
And so you can't read when you get your lens replaced.
Okay, okay. Well,
so
now,
hence
now
why
I feel bad
don't
for making
feel
fun
bad.
Of your bent glasses.
It's more funny, man. You know, it's like, why don't I just go out and get a pair of real glasses? What the hell is my problem?
Right, right. You know, well, it makes me feel like a huge wuss, because, like, the whole reason I have glasses, and they're super, super, like, it's not a very strong prescription. But it's because it, like, I strain to see stuff, so it gives me headaches.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah,
that's it. That's my story.
Right.
You had total surgery on both your eyes to, like, make artificial lenses and everything like that.
Yeah,
that
so what ends up happening is they make you choose. You can either see close or far away, distance.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and so you get that option now.
Because you can't focus.
Right. So in my right eye, when they originally did the surgery, they had thought about, why don't we go ahead and try this new lens? It was called a crystal lens.
Okay.
They put it in my eye, and it's supposed to balance it. You know, you could see distance, and you can also see near. Well, it kind of works. I'd say it works 40% of the time. Sometimes my buddies can see me, like, kind of squinting at my phone to read it, because if I squint enough, I can get clarity.
Wow.
So I
you're
go
almost
to,
like a bionic man.
Yeah, exactly. So I go to Walgreens.
That's where you had the procedure done?
Yeah. And I get by the $5 glasses that keep in my pocket.
Sure.
And I bust them out, and then they'll break in my pocket, and then I'll buy a new pair.
Yeah, because they're so cheap.
Yeah, and it's endless, man. It never stops.
There you go. Dude, okay, so I one more question about this eye thing. So when you had the surgery, what happened when you woke up? Were you able to see, like, right away, or were you blind?
Yeah, you know, cataract surgery is fairly it's a psychedelic experience, I would say.
Okay. How so? Seeing stuff, like, colors.
Well,
they
bring you into a room, and, you know, they lay you down. They don't put you out.
It's all laser now, right?
Well, I don't know if it is it's a procedure. I mean, they remove the lens. So however they get it out.
Okay. Yeah.
You know, it's much different than, like, something like LASIK. When I sat down on the operating table, you know, the doctor comes in and everybody's like, "Oh, you're going to feel really good for a minute, and then you're going to see some stuff, some colors," and then all of a sudden they just start pumping your eye. Like, you just see all these fluids coming into your eye, you know, purple, red, green, whatever. And
what?
And you're loopy. So it's kind of going on for 10, 15 minutes, and you don't really know.
Like a lava lamp or
something
like that?
Yeah, and they block your other eye.
Okay.
So it's closed. So you're only seeing the vision of this eye that's open, and, you know, because they prop it open.
Right.
And then,
like,
they're removing the lens.
Like in a Clockwork Orange
Kind of thing. Yeah. And then you see the lens come out of your eye.
What?
Yeah. And then they install the new one. And it's a very...
Can you instantly see after the
you know
new
what?
One is
what
installed?
What happens is they... I don't know for everyone. I mean, I can only speak for myself. But they went ahead and they put it back in. They taped my eye shut. They made it go for an hour.
Okay.
And then they undid the tape, and then they said, you know, when you get home, you can take the bandage off. And it was like, it's like seeing in Technicolor all of a sudden, you know, because your eyes are cloudy. It's like a very, like, blurry
white. That you can't get rid of.
And you can't get rid of it. It's like, it feels like there's fog in your eye. It feels like like when you steam a mirror, that's what it feels. Everything looks like that. So there's no contrast in colors outside. There's you know, these kind of other things going on. Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy.
That's like, and that's one of those surgeries that people probably freak out about.
Yeah, I mean,
it's like eyes, maybe nose, and dental.
Yeah,
that's the kind of the scariest, the scary thing.
Yeah, I think so. I think that, you know, when this all was going on, you know, the cataracts happened because of a procedure that they were pumping my eyes full of steroids to get rid of the inflammation.
Yeah.
And when they do that, one of the side effects is cataracts. And I think that anyone that gets a steroid shot into their eye, you know, maybe fuck, man. I mean, 95% of them have to get cataract surgery. I mean, it's inevitable that it's going to happen. And so most people, you know, get cataracts just from age. But I got it from something else.
Yeah, from this weird
So here
thing.
I am in my 30s, and I'm getting, you know, just turned 30. And I'm
You
going
had just
in,
turned 30 just when turned the 30. When the thing happened?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. How wild is that?
That sucks.
Yeah. So that's why I have my bionic glasses.
That's amazing. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, yeah, I've got a friend. Like, eye things really freak me out. And I think it's just because, like, those are kind of the most sensitive things on your body that are, like, open to the elements.
I think what ends up happening, too, is you lose your vision.
Right.
And you don't realize.
We're so dependent on it.
Yeah, you don't even realize what it is. I mean, until one day you wake up. And I can't see out of my left eye.
Right.
Whoa, it's black. It is completely dark. It's as if I close my eyelids and boom.
Well, yeah, it's a scary thing. You got to relearn everything.
Yeah,
right?
And I had these panic moments. So, you know, they treated it and it seems to be doing fairly well now.
Yeah. Well, that's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Remember, I had a friend that I grew up with who was doing a roofing project. And all of a sudden he was... You know, he was working with the nail gun, and he felt some pressure in his head. And he looked over, and he couldn't really, you know, his head felt weird, face felt weird. And his buddy who was up there on the roof with him was like, oh, my God, Tristan, you've got a nail in your eye. And it, like, somehow the nail gun, it deflected, the nail deflected off of something and went straight into his eye. And he's got this, like, X-ray of his own head.
Oh my God.
With this nail that is just going into his head. It didn't go into his skull, but it went in straight
see?
Into his eye. Yeah.
Crazy.
So so he had to stay with it in his eye in the ambulance. And then, went to the doctor and they, you know, carefully pulled it out.
Right.
And they kind of patched it up. I think he told me once he sees like a big black dot.
Yeah, that makes sense.
That kind of just kind of like, you know, everywhere.
Right.
Everywhere he looks, there's this big black dot.
Those things happen all the time.
Sure.
You know, like the black dots, especially with
like
vision
amazing.
Issues.
Yeah, it's amazing to me that you can... Now medicine is so great that you can fucking do something
Yeah,
like
the
that.
Eye is...
You can take your lenses out.
It's, right, it's resilient. I mean, it's very... It's like
it's
a
insane.
Very... I think it's a complicated organ. More complicated than most, you know. I think there's a lot of things happening in the eye.
Yeah, there's like cones, there's rods.
Exactly.
What the fuck are those things, man?
They're
Come on.
Yeah.
Come on.
So there you have it.
There
man.
It is.
There
well,
it
that
is.
Was a great intro to this,
thanks,
to this chat
man.
We're going to have. Matt Drenick from the band Battle Me joining me here at the Sunset. Well, actually, I'm joining you.
You are. We just loaded in.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. You're playing a couple shows here in Seattle in support of the new album, Habitual Love Song.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And when did that come out?
Came out in mid-January.
Oh,
so
okay.
January 15th.
So it's only been out a month?
Three and a half weeks.
I'm a big fan of it.
Cool.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah.
Good.
And how have things been going on this record?
It's been good. You know, I think that it's a bit of a slow burn record for me.
Okay.
I mean, I hate to be bored as an artist, and so I'm always trying to change things up and to push myself to go in different directions. You know, I do one thing and then I quickly see that, nah, that's not really what I'm into really, you know, or whatever. And I think that happens with a lot of bands, you know, they get outside influences on what they should do or, it's a temperamental thing. I mean, you know, you flow with it.
I totally dig that too. Cause you don't want to, I mean, you know, most, I would say a majority of bands probably get locked into the same type of music that they play.
Yeah, they do.
Some are really good at it. Some, you know, not so much. They may have one good record.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of gets repetitive.
Right, and they kind of do their thing. You got to switch it up. So I think the reaction to this record so far, you know, is I wanted to do a very lyrically driven record.
Yeah.
And I think that maybe in the past I haven't focused so much on the lyrics of songs.
Well, in this one, I was going to say, too, this record is a little bit more poppy.
Yeah, especially the last one,
sure.
Which was more rooted in kind of 90s rock that I loved.
Yeah.
And now this one is a little bit, you know, we were on tour. What ended up happening was we were on tour, and Chad, he's the guitar player now, but he was the bass player. And, I mean, you know, touring around for 6 months in a van, mm-hmm. you keep listening to certain things. And I mean, sure. there was a slew of different records that we listened to, but one that we kept going back to was that first, the only Modern Lovers record.
Oh, yeah.
And I just remember thinking, like, man, this is the shit. I mean, fuck everything else. This guy's doing it. You know, I could just feel his songs. They were romantic. They kind of had this weird lyrical vision behind all of them. They were innocent and fun.
Yeah.
And it wasn't taking themselves too seriously, but it just worked. And I think when we got home, it wasn't as if I made a conscious effort to do that, but it was just whatever was coming out was like, you know what? I'm going to write about my buddies. I'm going to write about my friends that have died. I'm going to write about all the kind of the soft losers, you know. I'm tired of the heroes always winning. I want to have the
I like how you just called your friends, your buddies, a bunch of soft losers.
No, but you know, like, I guess my point is that I've never had allegiances.
Okay.
So
What do you mean by that?
Well, some kids are into punk rock, and some kids are into metal, and some kids, and they all tagline, you know, whatever.
Allegiances people in tagline styles of music.
I'm a punk kid, or I'm this, or I'm that. You know what I mean? They kind of like they're into the garage rock scene, and that's it. And I just never had those allegiances, and so I think that a lot of times, you know, especially playing rock and roll, is you get the cool kids.
Yeah.
Coming in, you know, and you get all kinds of people, but you know, you get the cliques, and the people that were more interesting to me were always the ones that were just a little bit outside the cliques. You know, the kid that was like kind of over in the corner and he's a little weird, but he's like really interesting at the same time. Whereas sometimes when you would hang out with a really beautiful girl in high school, you find out there's not a lot going on, things like that. I don't know, you know,
or the
beautiful guy in high school, whatever, you know, I mean, I think that, that's kind of what I mean. And so when I say losers, it's a very nice thing.
It's an open-ended descriptor.
Yeah.
Is like, what it is. I mean, because everybody in their own right is kind of a loser, you know?
Yeah.
It's just like it's hidden down below.
Right.
Right?
It is.
Yeah.
And I dig the people that have a little bit more to say than, you know, putting on a great motorcycle jacket that they bought, you know, at some nice vintage store. I like the kids that are like kind of a little out there, a little freaks. And my wife thinks that I'm the Pied Piper of Lost Souls. You know, she's always saying that because it's just always been like that. I think that, you know, there is some kind of people attract each other.
Yeah, so I would say weirdos attract each other.
They do. And you know, I don't think that
I'm not calling people weirdos, but like, you know what I mean?
No, I don't think that I'm like, I wouldn't necessarily say that I'm weird, but like, I would definitely say that I'm fairly open-minded to someone's individualness.
Sure.
Yeah. And I dig that. And I think that, you know, a lot of things that I liked growing up and as a writer, just dabbling in writing, you know, or just dabbling in songwriting, you know, we're always like the people that are a little offbeat, you know, never like, I don't know. Like, I was always into the Dirt Bombs from Detroit, not the Von Bondies from Detroit.
Right.
The Von Bondies were probably more of a commercial band. I don't know. But the Dirt Bombs were, and I liked both of them. Don't get me wrong. I'm not trashing anyone here, but I don't know. I like kind of the freaks.
I'm with you, man.
In a sense.
I've got kind of the same thing. Like, one of my friend Luke once said to me as we were sitting, we had backstage passes to Sasquatch
one year.
And we were just sitting backstage, you know, and I had done a bunch of interviews earlier that day and stuff. And all these constantly, we're just sitting in the bed of this, like, car, you know?
Right.
And all these people just start walking up and just taking up conversation with me, like weird, weird dudes. Like, guy in top hat, you know, he's beelining it straight for me.
Right.
And we have, like, an hour-long conversation. My buddy Luke, at the end of it, just looks over at me and is like, you're a fucking magnet.
Right. Yeah, and I like that. That's cool. Well, we hit it off right when you came in.
Sure.
It was funny, you know. You came in, you got the big drink in your hand. know,
alcohol is a definite. It brings people together.
It does.
Right?
Yeah, it's a very celebratory thing.
Unless you're off the juice, and then you know just
yeah, which is cool. I have a lot of friends
that's
like
fine
that too. Yeah,
that's fine too. Yeah. So you said that this album is a bit more lyrical. Do you have like in past albums? Like I've always really enjoyed your lyrics. I've also always had a big problem with writing lyrics. Are you the same way? Like, was it hard to do this album since you wanted to focus more on that?
I think that, you know, as musicians and artists, you kind of create these villains. At least I do. You know, the man is the problem, or the record industry is the problem, or Spotify is the problem, or like that guy over there is the problem. Like,
right, right.
And you kind of got to have these good and bad relationships, I think, within the songs.
Yeah.
So I think that a lot of the past records, especially, you know, the first two, were real. They were insular, you know, I was being very, very like conscious of how I felt. You know, when I wrote something like Just Wait, it was like about, you know, feeling like I'm losing time, and it was very internal. You know, I'm losing all this time, and I don't want to lose this time, and I want to be, you know, recognized as not being that person. But then at the end of the day, you know, it's, you're really just writing about common themes that everybody else is. And so,
sure.
I figured that, you know, I'd live this life that I'd always wanted to live. You know, I'd definitely done whatever I wanted to do, and along the way, I'd always met these amazing people that, you know, inspired me. And so I just started thinking more like along the lines of a writer instead of along the lines of a songwriter.
So would you consider this a much more personal record then?
Yeah, definitely. I think it definitely has, you know, hints of, you know, people that I've met along the way. I mean, I remember when, you know, we did Pete's song, and which didn't even make the vinyl, but that's a whole different story, but it made the final record. And I remember being like, you know, some people were like, I don't know about Pete's song. And I'm like, no, that's the whole point of the fucking record is Pete's song. Pete's song is the record. Like, that's my buddy. That's my buddy Pete. Like, he's got to.
Was that the one you were referring to earlier where he died or something?
No, Pete didn't die. Oh. He's actually in Boston now.
Pete,
Rob,
you're doing great. Okay.
Rob died. And
okay.
Rob was the guy. He was my main character in Back to You.
Okay.
You know, so he used to send me these crazy he did a lot of video text messages. That was his deal.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, at first we thought they were kind of funny, like, man, what a freak. What is he doing? And now looking back on it, it's brilliant.
When you're glad you have all that stuff.
Oh my
right?
God, yeah. And he would always be at the pool, like at some weird pool in Austin, like listening to Prince.
Yeah.
And he'd be like tapping his head and he'd say something stupid. But he was one of my dear friends. I played music with him forever and I love him. And,
yeah.
And he died so suddenly that, you know, so when I started writing these songs, it was like, I'm going to write about everybody and I'm going to go down. This is where I'm going now.
Cool,
and
man.
And I want to go there.
I like
wanna,
that.
You know, kind of. I was always a fan of Kerouac and stuff like that. You know, I was always a fan of that romanticizing your friends and kind of taking chances that way.
I was a big fan of that as well. But I don't know if I clearly understood Kerouac's writing. Like whenever I read that, I was pretty young when I read On the Road.
Yeah,
and
On the Road.
I don't know if my mind was ready for it. I think I need to go back and revisit that.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think he's pretty polarizing. I think people either love him or hate him.
Yeah,
but
either you get it or you don't.
And I felt like I was always a kid in high school that was seen a certain way.
Sure.
And then you kind of become this other kid that's dreaming a lot. You know, you're a daydreamer. You're like a kid in the class that's like, what's going on back there with that kid? You know, and I'm like thinking about other things. And the nice thing I always thought about that particular version of writing was that they just seemed like big dreamers all the time. You know, it was like Scott Fitzgerald and stuff. I was always into F. Scott more than Hemingway. And I was always into like Henry Miller because I thought his characters, or him, I thought he was really gritty, and he kind of lived in the underground.
Yeah.
I thought that was cool.
So basically, I mean, you brought a lot of those elements into
your writing,
right? Yeah,
I made an attempt.
That's a valiant effort
to tell it like it was. You know, I mean, you know, the things in Pete's song all happened. Like there were these moments when we would take the car to Montreal.
Yeah,
and we would leave school on a Friday night, and we would drive to Montreal, and then we'd go out and we'd get completely plastered on drugs that I don't do anymore.
Yeah,
and we'd freak out, and that's kind of how it went for a long time.
Yeah, well, that's cool.
It's cool, man. Yeah. I mean, it happened.
Yeah,
it's almost fake.
It just made me think of like there is. I wonder what it would take for a musician, or if there is one out there that could be almost like a Gonzo type.
A Gonzo, yeah, I love that
type. Like
you need a Stedman
writer. yeah, you do need a Stedman, right?
I mean, I think that there are. I also think that there's a lot of good songwriters out there that are taking advantage of the lyrical content.
Uh-huh.
Like I think that people like Courtney Barnett.
Oh my God.
I remember when I heard that record, I was like, what the fuck am I? I mean, that was kind of the turning point, I would say. You know, if you want to know the truth, like when we were on tour, that was the stuff that was, you know, that was coming out new. And then I was being hammered with, I'd always been a Lou Reed fan of Transformer in that era. And I'd always been a Mott the Hoople fan.
Yeah.
But you can kind of point to like, wow, well, I was really, this other kind of fan. And then Courtney Barnett comes out and that record's playing on the van ride, and it's like I understand what's going on here.
Oh sure. Yeah,
I don't understand some other bands. I don't feel like I have a kinship with them. It doesn't matter that, you know.
Yeah
it's not like that I disagree with them stylistically, but with her, it felt so raw and visceral, and kind of like even when she's singing about other things, I just really took a liking to it.
Oh man, and that record is so freaking good.
Oh yeah,
so freaking good.
Come
it's
on.
Such a classic.
It just sounds good too.
Instant classic. Yeah.
What the hell?
I mean,
who made that record?
Fuck, some sort of angel.
What's that?
Some sort of angel.
Yeah, seriously. I mean, it's so clean.
It's
and
just,
like it's just it
yeah,
sound
yeah.
The drums sound good. The bass sounds good. There's
exactly.
not like. There's not this thing, you know, of like there's not this singer that's drenched in reverb. And
right.
There's
right.
not this.
It's so well put
over
together.
Attention to the production. You know, it just feels
totally
like,
agree.
Oh, it's a cool songwriter in a room.
Yeah.
What's she got to say? And you know what? She's got a lot to say.
Yeah, totally. I had the opportunity of having her on this show when she first came over to the States. And I turned it down because I had plans to go with my family up to our lake property.
Oh, man.
And I've been to the lake millions of times.
She would have been really interesting.
Yes.
Yeah. She would.
And now that's all, like, she just,
well,
you know, maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe next
maybe,
time.
Maybe you're the next Marin.
Some website called me that once, and I dug it.
That's cool. I like Marin quite a bit. I listen to his... His podcasts are cool.
I do as well.
Yeah.
I do as well.
Yeah.
Well, let's do this. Let's take our second musical break, and we'll maybe get a drink refill and come back, talk more with Matt Drenick of Battle Me.
Great.
Yeah. Be back in a moment.
I think now, you know,
now you're
I was
in
into Guided by Voices when I was a kid.
Me too.
Not a kid, but I would say like when I was, they were
high
more
school
of
age.
A
of junior a, high, high school.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
Junior high. No, I would say more like late high school.
Okay.
Almost like into college.
That's about where
I got
was
introduced
too.
To them, and I remember thinking, "Fuck yeah, man! I'm from Ohio. They're from Ohio. I get them. I understand what he's talking about. I get it. I get the dive yeah. bar mentality." And he's a big drinker, so you know I've seen him pass out on stage before, and it was always great.
I have never seen.
I mean, not like pass out, but like he's always been. It seems like a yeah. little bit out of his mind, and no. I like it when people take it to the edge like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I want to see it.
Kim like Deal, oh, like that, opening it. Up for Dayton. Sonic Youth.
Yeah,
here in Seattle, back in I don't know 1997,
right?
Something like that. She was playing with the Amps, I think.
Yeah,
at the time, and yeah, she was shithouse. I mean, falling into the Amps.
Yeah.
And everything like that, you know. But the show was amazing.
Yeah,
was
sometimes
so
you gotta get into the mind frame.
Yeah.
It kind of helps
yeah.
people get into it, too. And I do think that... Can we talk about Guided by Voices for a
yeah,
second?
Yeah, sure.
So
why not?
We were seeing a band, I'll leave nameless, who okay. I think is okay. And they had a particular crowd base in Portland... At the time, it's a national band, and
okay.
our friend had bought tickets for us, and we went. And their crowd was a little like, I don't know, it was affecting the way that I was seeing the show. And
like
I
mean, they were just indifferent or something?
No,
or
like, it was more like they were just kind of bro-y.
Okay.
And it was a little like Portlandia meets Broville. I can't
yeah.
describe it. It was tough, and no matter what the band did on stage, it wouldn't allow me to like love it because I had this like... Viking tie-dye tank top guy next to me banging his shoes against the ground.
I mean, I have an idea who you're talking about, and I won't say it either.
And it was tough. And so I do think though, when you go to see Guided by Voices,
yeah,
there is not that problem.
No,
because that is a show where everyone is there for a certain reason,
mm-hmm.
and they enjoy the band, and it seems like a very brotherly, sisterly thing, almost like I could imagine what, you know, MC5 stuff would be like.
Sure.
I did just compare the MC5 to Guided by Voices.
So. You're reaching deep in hipster cred here, buddy.
No, I'm just saying, you know, I you know why else I always liked Guided by Voices is because they were the band that everyone always thinks like they're this, you know, critically acclaimed hipster darlings. And maybe they are, but for what I remember is that no one knew who they were until someone found them.
That's what I was going to say. I was just having this conversation. It's so funny. I was just having this conversation. Our last episode featured a good friend of mine, producer Ian Brennan.
Mm-hmm.
He worked with Fugazi and TV on the Radio.
Yeah.
All those guys. Great, great dude. By the way, up for another Grammy this year.
Jeez.
God damn it. The Zomba Prison Project that they recorded in Malawi.
Sure.
And it's fantastic. Everybody listening to this should go and check that out. But I was just talking to him about this. Like, he mentioned, he was talking more along the lines of, like, the Pixies or Fugazi, where he put together this show with Fugazi. It was kind of like a reunion show with Sleater-Kinney, Fugazi, and the other band is slipping my mind, but... free show,
yeah,
in San Francisco, and like 15,000 people showed up, right? And everybody there was like, I remember seeing Fugazi in that little club or something
right.
like that, right? And it's like, well, that's kind of impossible because everybody's saying that, but none of you were there, right? Like,
right?
And it's kind of the same thing I feel about Guided by Voices, where I've talked to so many people. You know, not you,
no,
not you
I get
included,
it, yeah.
but so many people who always kind of bring that out, right? It's the I saw them when, I knew them when, I was a fan of them when, you know. But do you? I don't even know where I was going with that.
Well, I think the point is, it's like nobody really knew who they were until, I don't know if it was Thurston Moore or somebody kind of grabbed on to the band.
Right,
I don't know the exact history of how they became, you know, how they got signed to Matador. But I do know that, you know, I think that Bob Pollard as a writer is amazing. I mean,
prolific.
I think he's prolific, but his lyrics are great. That's the other thing. People always say things like, oh, well, the guy's prolific.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he does. It's like, no. His lyrics are cool, man. You got to look at them. You know what I mean? Just because a guy writes a lot of songs and that doesn't mean that that's it. Like, they're visionary stuff, I think.
I
really think that, you know, Alien Lanes is one of those records that I could put on right now.
Yeah.
And be totally amped about.
Well, see, here's the thing. When I use the term prolific, and I'm not.
I know what you mean, though. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think the people that come out with that amount of work.
Right.
Like, it's, when I use that term, it's like genius level stuff.
Right.
Because, like, and a lot of it. Right. Like, I would group Dead Milkmen in that same category.
Right.
Because, like, their catalog goes back so fucking far. And with the exception of one album that I did not like.
There's always that, like, one.
There's always one.
There's always the one.
Yeah, yeah. But it's like, you know, their stuff was mind-blowing. And it turned me on. That was, like, one of the first bands that kind of turned me on to punk rock.
Right.
Back in, like, junior high.
Right.
Right. What was the first band for you that kind of turned you on to, you know, the style of music that you kind of play?
You know,
indie band or something like that, something that you found out about as a kid that really.
I mean, unfortunately, I would say that my high school years as a music kid was pretty on the average boring, you know. I mean, I was a 90s kid that was into Nirvana and Soundgarden and Alice in Chains, and you know, I was that was what was happening when I was 12, 13, 14 years old. I mean, of course, like, I was into that.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, it kind of moves on. Like, you know, I got high for the first time, I think, when I was 15. And then all of a sudden it was like, whoa, who's this Peter Tosh guy? You know, and then you start listening to that, you know, and you kind of move on. Like, then you get into, like, the Heptones, who are a little bit cooler.
Yeah, yeah.
A little more underground than that. And I think that, you know, it moves in waves. I would say that, you know, I didn't realize how much my older brother had like a kind of an attachment to me when I was in high school. I knew that he was in this kind of, like, scarier cowpunk band. That was, like, you know, they had a record out on In the Red Records.
Okay.
And to me, as a 15-year-old kid, that meant nothing. But now, as a, you know, a mid-30s
music. Really? At 15 years old, that didn't mean anything to you?
I don't know.
Like,
I just
didn't
know.
My brother's on a label.
Well, he was on a label, but it wasn't like the labels that you kind of... It wasn't Soundgarden label. Like,
well,
it wasn't
sure,
like...
Sure.
And I, you just don't know. It's like, I mean... You got to go back. Like, this is back. I went to a, you know, I grew up in a fairly modest house with, you know, we weren't.
You said
poor.
Ohio, right?
Yeah, we weren't poor or anything. And I think that in Ohio, it's a very, like, the Midwest is, especially Ohio, especially Cincinnati. I mean, there's not a lot of, like, history of, you know, groundbreaking bands coming out of there. Maybe Afghan Whigs and Ass Ponies. But other than that, it wasn't like they were every day. It was like you've got a lot of kids, a lot of private schools, a lot of all guys schools, a lot of all women schools.
Uh-huh.
And I think it's hard to kind of find your niche, you know? So you're looking for stuff to get attracted to. But it wasn't like I went to a high school where, you know, there were all these, like, punk rockers that were listening to this. Or
sure.
They didn't give a fuck about me, so they
right,
were never.
Right.
It wasn't like they were ever inviting me to hang out with them.
But did your brother, like, introduce you to anything that?
Yeah,
kinda, like,
he did.
Opened,
I mean,
opened things,
you know,
up for you?
His band used to tour with the Jesus Lizard.
Oh yeah,
yeah.
That's
and,
pretty cool,
and
man.
The Cows, the Laughing Hyenas. I mean, all that stuff, you
yeah,
know. And
yeah.
And so he's a good one when it comes to stuff like that.
Sure, sure.
You know, he understood, and I didn't realize how rad his band was until I was older. I had no idea. Like, I think when I was 15, I was actually really into bands like Zeppelin and Soundgarden and Sabbath and things like that.
Totally.
And even, like, some weird hip-hop that was coming out of Ohio, like, mm-hmm. you know, the first Bone Thugs and Harmony, shit like that. Like,
yeah.
The Jesus Lizard wasn't exactly on my profile. Now, when I started playing guitar and like listening to weird pedals and, you know, blown out amps, I was like, wow. And then thinking, wow, my brother used to tour with them is fucking crazy.
That's pretty cool. You ever talk to him about like experiences that he had on the road? And stuff?
Yeah. I mean, you know, when we, an earlier band of mine played with a band of David Yao's years later in LA. This was probably 10 years ago at this place. It was in Glendale. I can't remember where it was. And we opened for his band. And, you know, my brother just calls. He sends me. He calls me before text messages, you know. And he's like, yeah, is he still jumping on people's backs? So it's like, and he was, you know, he did that whole night. But I remember, I remember that was kind of a big deal for us that we were playing with his band. And I think that, you know, anyway, back to, you know, high school and things like that is like, I think that, you know, the first indie band that the first thing that kind of changed my mind about music was probably bands like Elliott Smith and Guided by Voices and kind of that lo-fi, you know. I had an ex-girlfriend who was really into Pavement.
Yeah.
And especially the first Pavement record with like Summer Babe and the second one, the Crooked Rain, stuff like that. And I think that, you know, and then that led to, you know, Sebado and
see, that's what I'm talking about.
You
right
know what
there.
Though? I will
like
say
a
this.
gateway band for you.
I would say that the gateway band,
okay,
because I always forget this, the gateway band for me when I was in high school was Dinosaur Jr.
There you go.
They were the band that was like, they were kind of big enough where they were on a big record label.
Mm-hmm.
They were kind, you know, they were doing really weird stuff.
Well, and they had kind of, they had broke through just a little
bit. Just a little bit with Feel the Pain.
With Feel the Pain, which is actually the intro music to my show. And,
really?
Yeah, it is.
Oh, I love it.
It's funny you brought that up.
It's so funny.
And now I know that you haven't listened to it, so wow.
Okay. Oh, no! But, hey, man! No way.
but yeah, that was one of those records, right? That was like Feel the Pain kind of broke through a little bit.
Right.
Because it was rocky enough, it had a coherent through line.
It did.
Right?
Yeah.
And I remember... they played on David Letterman.
Right.
And they played Feel the Pain. And it blew me away because on that show they were playing to a bass track because him and Barlow were having another fight. You know? And it just that was one of those that was kind of a gateway for me as well.
Yeah.
Because it opens the door for people like Pavement.
It does.
Bands like Pavement.
Right. There was this guy, Joe Rusk, when I was in grade school. And I remember in seventh grade, he came in with the Green Mind shirt on.
Yeah.
And it had the girls smoking the cigarette with it out. And I remember being, and this is 1991. It was right when it came out. I mean... And I remember thinking, wow, that is the coolest shit ever. Because at that time, you know, sixth, seventh grade, all you want to do is sneak out and go smoke cigarettes.
With girls.
Like, where's that girl? I'm in love with her. You know, and I think that was the moment where everything changed. But Dinosaur Jr., like I said, you know, again, you're kind of, that was like the ballpark. But there wasn't the internet back then. And, you know, didn't have, you had Maxim Rock and Roll and Rolling Stone. And maybe there was like a Magnet magazine or Spin lying around. But
yeah. I think one of the big gateways for me to get into kind of the indie rock or what would later be considered indie rock was Built to Spill.
Oh yeah.
Like they had a big gateway for a lot of people, I think.
There was an ex-girlfriend of mine that loved those bands, and I will say that, you know, I definitely give her credit to introducing me to a lot of the exterior bands beyond Dinosaur Jr. and things like that in the indie world, you know. I mean, she was good about it, but this is like when I was 18 when I met her. So, I mean, this is kind of happening at this age when, you know, I was discovering that I wanted to play music.
So, with 18 years old, that was when
17
you kind of started?
Is my mom bought me a guitar.
Yeah. Were your parents musical?
No.
No?
No.
They just saw like you just kind of glommed onto something.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they were, you know, my dad was, I wouldn't say that they were fairly musical. I mean, I can remember my dad was like into the Temptations and Phil Collins. And
sure.
I can't really remember what my mom was into, though my mom is a huge music fan. Now, I think she went through a major transformation in her life, probably like in her 50s. You know, she decided to go the Peace Corps, so she went in like this flaming Republican and came out like a flaming Democrat.
Like, I mean, you were an adult during that?
Yeah, I was
that
like,
point?
I was probably in art school at that point, you know, and she had left to go to the Peace Corps.
Wow, that's pretty radical. Yeah, that's like a radical change, man.
Yeah, like a life-changing moment for her, you know?
Wow.
Yeah, so she did that, and then I think that it opened her eyes. I mean, I think that's the other problem, is like what I'm talking about with the Cincinnati and the high school experience down there.
Yeah.
Is that it tends
a little bit
to be
closed off.
Yeah, totally, man. I mean, it's like, you know, what's really going on down there? I mean, maybe something now, but I mean, back when I was a kid in the 90s, mid 90s, I mean, I'll fight anyone that says that there was a lot of stuff happening in high school, because, and if there was, no one's inviting me. So I mean, what do you want me to say? You know, it's like, you know, I remember seeing like the Steve Miller Band and like going out and seeing, trying to get tickets to like see Soundgarden and stuff.
The takeaway from this conversation is going to be Matt Drenick, not as popular as he thought in high school.
No, but I mean, like, you know, I don't know. You know what I'm saying?
I do. Yeah. No. I'm just giving you shit.
It's a, you know,
yeah.
You start to find your allegiances with people, you know.
Sure,
and I was
sure.
always like more attracted to people that, yeah, I don't know, yeah. smoke pot.
See, stuff. I was lucky enough because I grew up over here, not in Seattle, but over in a very small town across the water from here.
Greatest.
And we were in close enough proximity where you're still kind of influenced by what was going on
here
in the city, right?
Yeah.
And so we were able to, you know, hop on a ferry boat and go and see Built to Spill at this old club called the Rock Candy, which is now defunct, you know, and shows like that where we could be integrated into it slowly, slower than everybody else, but we could still find out about that kind of stuff. So I feel like I had a pretty, you know, lucky childhood in the music realm.
Yeah.
You know, but.
Yeah, and it was cool. I'm sure you did. I mean, God, I would have loved to have been from up here, you know. I mean, I do love the Afghan Whigs, and I will say that, like, you know,
they're
the
great.
Breeders
they're
and
great.
Guided by Voices, and there's something about Ohio bands, you know, that like the Thomas Jefferson Slave Apartments, and yeah,
I have no idea who that is.
Oh yeah,
I gotta check that out.
Yeah, they're sweet, you know. And my brother sent me their record. He thought I would really like it. This is years ago, and then I brought it up to him like probably a year ago, and he's like, that guy. You know, he's all fucking mad at me because I beat him in a one-on-one game in some park in Columbus, you know. But the Thomas Jefferson Slave Apartment, they're a super rad band. And it is funny, like, when you meet people from Ohio and you just kind of bring up everyone knows the Afghan Whigs. But then you say, well, what about the Harry Pat Band? What about the and they're like, oh, yeah, you're from Ohio, you know, and you just kind of get it.
So people in the scene, they still, you can feel, you can seek each other out.
Totally.
It's just more few and far between.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's like anything, you know.
Right, right.
I mean, everybody knows probably who Mudhoney is, but, you know, did you see Green River or whatever? I don't know what it would be, you know. It's like
right
up here. So
No, that's totally, that's a totally valid point because I don't think a lot of people did.
Right.
You know, I mean, there's still that crowd here in Seattle, you know, the people that actually grew up during that time
in
the city and were kind of part of that crowd. And they're still around, man, and they're still going to shows, and you'll run into them, you know, every once in a while, and they're good people, and they've got great fucking stories.
Yeah.
You know? They got great stories.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's very... I don't know if I guess I can't speak for people like that, because I was not of age... Yet I was not involved in any of that.
Sure,
but it seems like, you know, people my age, your age, we really fantasize about it.
Of course,
like
that's
it was
the whole point. Yeah,
it's sure.
Like you're always supposed to fantasize about everything.
Yeah,
I feel like there is no fantasy anymore.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I love that.
But
when
it
I
seems
was a
like
kid.
It kind of like from hearing stories from people that were in it back then, kind of sucked.
Totally, I'm sure. Doesn't every scene suck, really?
Yeah, it kind of blew. There weren't a lot of places to play, you know, and like the it was a bad crowd.
You're kind of
and,
getting screwed over.
Sure. Yeah, totally. Yeah. So, we probably need to wrap this thing up. But I did want to ask you, like, what made you move? Because you were playing in bands in Austin. Right?
Yeah, that's right.
You moved from Ohio to Austin?
I did.
Yeah?
I moved around. Like, I went to Florida for a hot year when I was 18, and then I went to art school in Boston for a couple years, and I dropped out. And then I moved to Austin, really, because there was nowhere else to go. I kind of got stuck there.
Were you playing music this whole time, too? Was that kind of on the mind?
I would say that, like, I was more in, like, a way that no one really believed that I could. Okay. You know, your parents are kind of like, oh, that sounds nice, honey. Like, why don't you go to hobby territory? You know, like a lot of hobbies. And so I ended up going to art school mainly because I was trying to be creative. And the only thing that I could find that was kind of cool was film.
Okay.
You know, so I was going to film schools.
Yeah.
Because I was like, well, I can do shit and be weird, you know, like have fun and try to make cool films and write little stories that can get made into, you know, short films and things like that. And it'll buy me some time, you know, and then maybe I can write some songs too. And so that's kind of how the whole thing got going, got cooking with me.
And then the music thing just kind of snowballed.
Yeah, and then I went to Austin and I was with this girl at the time, you know, we had moved from art school together and we went down there and she... and I eventually split up, but before she did, you know, before we did that, you know, I was in an art school down there, like finishing up a film degree. And when I graduated, it was, you know, you can either move to Los Angeles and get a job as a grip or whatever, or you can stay here and play in your band. I was in this band, this garage rock band at the time that we had just started getting opening gigs for, like, The Raining Sound. And
what was this one called?
It's called The Good Looks.
Okay.
You'll find it nowhere. and so we started getting our first taste of really good stuff like that.
That's cool. That was how
I got down there. So I lived there, and then I moved up to Portland. I was on tour with a band called Lions.
Right.
And I met my wife at the time, who was friends with a band called Red Fang from Seattle. From Portland.
That's how John Sherman and Chris Coyle ended up in that video.
That's right.
In the End of the World video.
Yeah, they're buddies. They're great dudes.
Red
Fang and I can't remember how we met. We met through a band called Dark Skies. They were from Portland, and they had introduced us to Red Fang. This is Lions days. And then we became friends with them. So whenever they would come to kind of the southern area, the Midwest, we would do dates with them, Lions would. And then we went to the West Coast and we ended up hooking up with them. And so I'm spending the night, you know, the whole band's at John Sherman's house. And then we go out to a club afterwards, after a night off, you know, and I see this girl at the bar and we, you know, make eye contact. And the next thing I know, you know, she's on tour with me in Europe and in the van or in the bus.
Sure.
You know, and then now we're married. So she didn't want to move to Austin.
Long story short.
Right. Yeah, long story short, you know, now we're married. And I love her to death.
Well, that's great, man.
She's my girl. Yeah.
That's great. So that's what kind of brought you to Portland?
Oh, yeah. That was it.
Really?
Yeah. Because I wanted her to move to Austin. You know, Lions wasn't done yet.
Right.
We were still kicking. We had life in us.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't like it happened because you know, decided to move up here. But I will say that, you know, me moving to Portland was definitely, you know, a serious nail in the coffin as far as that went. I mean,
I would say so.
Yeah. And I was okay with that because I enjoyed her company and I was done with that. You know, I think the whole band Lions was kind of done with the whole thing. We had been through.
Is there at least one guy that was in Lions that was like, this is fucked?
He was mad.
This is a Yoko Ono situation.
I'm sure that I can think of one particular guy that did that to me. Yeah, without a doubt. And I think that, you know, he was one of the newer guys.
Okay.
But But the other two guys in Lions we're still super tight with. And, we do you know, shows every once in a while. We do reunion shows. And I think it's always cool when you see how many people were into that band, who were into that band, especially, you know, on a national level and things like that.
Yeah.
Coming back to it, being removed from it for 6 years, you know, 7 years or something like that, not really having done it. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Well, are you fulfilled with what you're doing now?
Yeah.
Happy with it?
Yeah.
Happy with Battle Me?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's important for, like, you know, you always have to keep taking chances and keep, you know, trying to become a better songwriter, a better performer, and always, like, pushing yourself to not to be bored.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm able to make a living playing music and you know, I have a studio that I just built out in Portland and working with bands. You know, I had a girl named Charlie Hilton in that I've been working with on her record. She's in a band called Blouse. And, you know, JJ's solo record that I did and just things like that. So branching out a little bit, working with other people. And, you know, of course, I still do stuff with my brother and then Battle Me as well and touring. Yeah.
Well, that's great, man.
So it's super satisfying, I would say. You know, I mean, Lions was like a time period piece for me. You know what I mean? It was like really good for a long time. And then it just stopped becoming good.
Yeah.
And I think that happens to a lot of bands. You know, they get outside influence. There's managers that become involved and there's record labels that get involved. And all of a sudden you're making decisions on some marketing guy's thoughts.
Right.
You're like, what the fuck am I doing?
I can't even imagine that because I've never been in that situation. Well, I mean, in like a band setting.
Oh,
I know that with this thing that we're doing right now has kind of become that.
Yeah.
And it does. It sucks the fucking energy out of it.
Well, it does. There's just like, there's just no spirit in it sometimes if it becomes like that. I'm not saying it happens to all bands at all.
Right.
I'm just saying that, you know, it happened to that particular band, mm-hmm. I think, at the end.
Yeah.
I mean, when I was, like, out writing songs with L.A. songwriters for the band, I knew that was the end.
That was the end.
Like, what the fuck am I doing? I miss my buds. I miss my mates, my best friends. I want to make records with them. I don't want to write hit singles. I hate this game. Yeah. I hate the music industry. Fucking get me out of here.
That makes two conversations in a row that I've had now about the same thing. I and Brennan talked a lot about that.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, and but you know what, Matt? I got to let you go because you guys are starting to do setup and sound checks and stuff like that. But thank you so much, dude, for taking the time. This has been a real pleasure.
Of course, it was awesome. Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
Okay.
Man, oh my God, I just wanted that conversation to keep going and going and going. I had a great time talking with Mr. Drenick of the band Battle Me. I think that's pretty apparent in our conversation, too. I think he had a good time as well. In fact, actually, I know he had a good time because I heard it from Tyler, who set it up, man. He said he had a fantastic time. So, yeah. Matt, if you're listening to this, thank you so much. Tyler, who set it up, thank you so much. Go out and see Battle Me, man. If you have the chance to see this band live, take it. Sorry, I was burping. You can find out more about the band at battleme.tv, and they'll have tour dates and ways to get their newest album, and I suggest you get all their albums. Matt was kind enough to give me a vinyl copy of this new album, man, and God, it's good. It's so good, and it's very versatile, too. Like, a lot of the songs, like, you know, we played a couple of songs. The middle musical break, you heard All Night, All Night. Much different from the first song that we heard, right? Post is Dead, the first track off the album. And then this one that we're going to play, Going Out, Pete's Song, which we talked about a little bit, is fantastic too, and it's totally different. It's totally different. I love albums like that. I love it. Go out and see this band live, will you? All right. They don't have any tour
tour dates posted right now, but I do know that stuff is coming up for them. So keep posted, like their Facebook page, and follow in there. Okay, all right. We'll post links to all that stuff in the show page at air-raid.net. You can subscribe to Air Raid on iTunes, and if you do, please take a moment to rate the show. Only takes a couple seconds of your time and really helps us out in the long run, like we talked about in the beginning of the episode. We are also available on the Stitcher, TuneIn, Cairo Radio, and the Spreaker apps, man, for your mobile devices. We're everywhere, all right? You can find us there, or find us, you know, subscribe to us on the RSS feed at our website, air-raid.net, to your favorite little podcatcher. Keep in touch by liking our Facebook page at facebook.com/the Air Raid Podcast. We update things there less frequently. Our Twitter handle is at air-raid.net, or you can email me directly at aaron@air-raid.net. And remember to take the pledge, folks. Take the pledge like Nico in Austin, Texas, who got her friend Alice to fall in love with the show and a bunch of her friends to subscribe right there while they were having drinks in a bar. That is perfect. That's exactly what we want you guys to do, because we want to keep on expanding the show, keep on growing, and be able to get great guests each week. Those numbers are what help us get good guests on this show, get interesting people, get people that are making some really, really high-end art out there, guys. So as long as we keep growing, we can keep on bringing this awesome stuff to your attention. All right? And it's like it's kind of a vicious cycle. It's a vicious cycle. Okay, we're going to go out today, like I said, Battle Me off of the new album, Habitual Love Songs. Awesome, awesome stuff. This one's called Pete's Song. And thank you so much for listening, you guys. This has been great. I'm glad to be back after our week taken off with the family issues and all that stuff. It's good to be back in this seat and talking with you guys. So thank you so much for tuning in. We'll be back next week. I'm really excited about this one. I hope it goes well. Keep your fingers crossed for me. All right, this is Pete's Song by Battle Me. We'll be back next week with an all-new episode of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears. Have a good one, everybody. Nothing matters when you already lost your bets. That's what you told. My best friend too.